Good morning. It's good to be here. And for those of you who were in Sunday school, thank you for sticking around for round two. When I was pregnant with Ruth, we, like many other people, did the regular doctor visits, took a class with other expecting parents, learning what's happening with me, with my body, what's going on with the baby growing inside, and also what we might expect as mothers and fathers as the delivery process happens. We were given a rough outline of what labor and delivery could look like. This stage, and this typically happens in this next stage, what, you know, how long it might last, and all these kind of things. All while being told, you know, this is kind of a rough idea, not everything happens exactly like this. It was time for Ruth's arrival, and I'm not sure that anything that was discussed in those classes actually happened. It didn't feel like it. It went from pre-stage to stage five within about 10 minutes. And then when Ruth made her appearance, I remember Joe saying, I did not expect her to look like that. In all of those classes, he's like, they told us all of these things, but they never said she was going to look like this. Like the colors, all of these things. And so we can't be prepared for everything, but yet there are things that we do in our lives that we try to have a little bit of understanding about. And I apologize to anyone who did not prepare to come and hear about childbirth this morning when you came to church. What does childbirth have to do with the scriptures that we heard Hannah read? Nothing really. Though it did get our minds moving a little bit about when we're planning to do something, we usually have some information about what we're going to do. There are a few of us who at times have gone and done something with absolutely no preparation. How often does that usually work out to the best? Not very often. We don't usually embark on those journeys knowing nothing. Today we're looking at how Jesus was preparing and teaching about the kingdom of heaven to the crowds and the disciples. The kingdom of heaven that Jesus shared about with that crowd 2,000 years ago is the same kingdom of heaven that we have the opportunity to participate in today. So let's take a look at these five parables a little more closely that might help us as individuals and a church to live more fully into this kingdom. These teaching moments or these parables that Jesus had began previously with a few other parables, the sower and the seed and the weed among the wheat that Seth and Irvin have shared about in the previous 2 weeks. Yet there still seems to be more for us to learn in our understanding about the kingdom of heaven because Jesus goes on to tell five more parables to give us a clearer picture. And a really cool thing that Jesus does with these parables is that he describes scenes from everyday life, things that would have been familiar to the people, to his audience. For us, it takes a little more digging and kind of research to kind of maybe understand some of the things. But the audience that he was talking to then would have had an understanding of all of these comparisons and scenarios. In this first one, we read that the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that is planted in a field, a very small seed that grows into the greatest of shrubs, a place where the birds of the air can nest in its branches. This isn't the only time that Jesus uses the mustard seed to talk about something small that grows into something bigger. Faith the size of a mustard seed can move mountains, a verse we read later in the book of Matthew. There are a couple images in this parable that I want to think about this morning. The mustard seed, though stated as the smallest seed, is not then or is today actually the smallest seed. But stating that kind of gives that emphasis of something really, really tiny growing into this large shrub or tree that provides space for birds to rest, nest, have their eggs, grow their families. Jesus, like the mustard seed, was unassuming, born as a baby in Bethlehem, beginning his ministry, proclaiming the kingdom of heaven first to just a small group of disciples, then to larger crowds, and the growth continued. We read about the 3,000 that were baptized at Pentecost who were added to the church. Today, there are over 2.6 billion Christians in the world. That is significant growth. How exciting that something from so small is what it is today. How do we continue to be part of that growth? I also appreciate the image of the birds of the air. It doesn't say the dove or the sparrow nested in the tree. It says the birds of the air. People from all over the world, from all walks of life, can find rest and shade in the branches of the kingdom of heaven. Continuing on, the kingdom of heaven is like yeast or leaven that a woman took and mixed in with 3 measures, 50 or 60 pounds of flour, to make more than 50 to 100 loaves. Interestingly enough, there's not consensus on how much flour that was, other than a lot and a little bit of yeast. And it's interesting because leaven in stories or in understanding is often associated with corruption or uncleanliness. And during the Passover, the leaven was taken from the Jewish homes, thrown out, and they would have eaten the unleavened bread. Jesus here uses the comparison of yeast to the kingdom of heaven, which the woman hides and mixes into the dough. We're not all bakers, but most of us have seen that process when that yeast is added, the dough is left and rises and transforms into something that can be baked and become this beautiful, delicious bread that can feed many. Without the yeast, that dough is only a hard, dry, unappealing sort of bread that you can eat for a little while, but just isn't really life-sustaining. How is the kingdom of heaven, or the yeast, transforming our lives today, the life of the church? Are we allowing the kingdom of heaven to be mixed into our lives so that we are transformed, so that we might grow into the people and the church that God intended us to be? As we continue traveling down the road of everyday activities, we move from the woman baking bread and find ourselves in a field that has been purchased by a man because he found a treasure hidden in the field. He's so filled with joy about this discovery that he sells everything that he owns to buy the field to become the rightful owner of this treasure. For us, stories of buried treasure are just that, stories. But in this setting, it wasn't uncommon for people to bury their money, their coins, their gold, to keep it safe from thieves or soldiers in armies. And so this treasure that this man discovered is seemingly was forgotten, or maybe the original hider of this treasure had died. So this treasure is discovered. I'm not really sure about people digging up random pieces of property. I didn't get a good understanding of that, but apparently this was not uncommon either. And so this man finds his treasure. He keeps it there on the ground, goes off, sells everything that he owns to come back and get that treasure. This treasure, the kingdom of heaven, is of greater importance than anything else. It was worth selling everything else that this man owned for him to possess that treasure. What are some things in our lives that we're clinging to that we're not willing to give up so that we can fully own and cling to that treasure of the kingdom of heaven? Because according to this parable, Jesus is telling us that this treasure is worth more than everything else that we have. This doesn't mean that we are literally going out and selling everything that we have to be a good Christian. But maybe we want to consider what things in our lives are being given more priority than our faith and our relationship with God. There's so much joy in finding and claiming this treasure. Are we all in on this? Are we willing to claim it and make it the priority in our lives? Jesus continues on with the merchant, also like the kingdom of heaven. This merchant is in search of the finest pearls. He likely already has a small treasury of lovely pearls. And then one day he finds the most beautiful of all pearls. He sells all the pearls that he already had, everything else that he had. Because even though he thought those were great pearls before, he realized upon finding this one, this was the absolute best pearl that life had to offer. There are other things in the world that are going to grab our attention, things that we might invest our lives into, things that we give high priority. But in the end, we'll discover that these pearls in life, beautiful as they are, they're not the truest and most beautiful treasure that is available to us. Let's not settle. Let us continue to seek and search after this finest pearl. May we recognize and value the kingdom of heaven and desire to find it above all else. In the final parable, we find ourselves hearing about something that I'm sure was very familiar with the disciples, fishing. This time, the kingdom of heaven is described as a fishing net, one that's referred to as a dragnet. And this is a fishing net that would be square, that would have a cord on each corner and weighted on the bottom. So it would be thrown out, hung down straight because it's weighted. And so it's this large square. And then whether in a boat or on shore, they're going to gather those four corners together and they're going to drag this net in. And it's going to collect everything in its path. The net draws in all kinds of fish and sea creatures, not just the pretty fish, not just the tasty fish, but it collects all in its path. All the fish are then brought to shore where the fish are sorted, the good into the basket and the bad thrown out. Jesus tells the disciples that the angels are the ones to come and separate the evil from the righteous. We, as other fish, are being drawn in by the kingdom of heaven. We don't determine what other fish are in the kingdom. We are the fish, and we don't get to choose which other fish are kept in this basket or thrown out. We don't have the ability to do that. It's not our job. And I don't say that in a, this is a bad thing. This is something we should rejoice in. This is not our responsibility. We don't have to, that is not our concern. And that should be a freeing and life-giving idea for us, that we are being drawn in. We are being drawn into that along with others. And we are not responsible for making the kingdom of heaven what it is or who is there. And after Jesus finishes telling the disciples these parables, he asks them, "Have you understood all of this?" Because Jesus had explained those previous two parables, the sower and the seed and the wheat and the weeds. And so it seems like Jesus is making sure that the disciples are catching on to what he's trying to explain. Are they following along? They say, yes, they understand. I don't know if I would have been, so I'd be like, sure. Jesus goes on to tell them, "Therefore, every scribe who has been trained for the kingdom of heaven is like the master of a house who brings out of his treasure or his storeroom what is new and what is old." The disciples would have likely understood this comparison also as they were familiar with scribes. Scribes in the Jewish community were the people who were trained in the scriptures. They would have been familiar with the scriptures and would have been able to teach others. So it seems Jesus is slipping one last parable in there for them. They are now the scribes that have been trained or discipled about the kingdom of heaven. They are now the teachers. They are also very likely familiar with the Hebrew scriptures, the Old Testament. They, like the master of this house who brings out of his storeroom the new and the old treasure, they're not to give up or forget about their old treasures, those Hebrew scriptures, but to hold them together with the new treasure, with this new knowledge. The disciples may have been the first scribes, so to speak, but each of us as Christians had the opportunity to be trained and discipled in the way of Jesus and also be scribes and teachers to others around us. What are some ways that we're receiving new treasure, new knowledge today? The Holy Spirit that was given then is still with us today. God still moves in our midst. Are we open to new revelation? What is God speaking to us and wanting us to understand in our world today? What does it all mean for us as followers of Jesus, as people who are seeking the kingdom of heaven? One thing, sometimes I can be a little slow on catching things. It took me a bit to think about these parables. In some ways, they're not about us. I know it seems obvious. They say the kingdom of heaven is like, not Lori is like. The kingdom of heaven isn't dependent upon us. The kingdom of heaven may have had small, humble beginnings like the mustard seed, but it has grown beyond measure, and we can take comfort and rest in that. Not because of anything that we've done or will do. The kingdom of heaven, the reign of God, is like the yeast that transforms our lives and our churches. We are being transformed, but it's not by our own doing that the transformation happens. That comes from the work of the kingdom of heaven and the reign of God. The value of the kingdom of heaven is worth all and more than we can ever imagine. Like the buried treasure and the pearl, we have to give up, or sell off things in our lives so that we may have full ownership and access to the kingdom of heaven. And what it provides is more immeasurable joy than we can ever imagine. There are no other things that we can invest in that will have the rate of return as the kingdom of heaven. It's a guaranteed investment that will never decrease in value, no matter how many people invest in it or what happens with the stock market. We have no control over who enters the kingdom of heaven. We don't control the net or the ones and we're not the ones who sort the fish. It is not our role in the kingdom. After those five parables, we come to the last question. Do we understand all of this? I think we're on a continual journey of learning and understanding. Just like when Joe and I were preparing for Ruth's arrival, we tried to be prepared and have a good idea of what to expect. But as we discovered, there were some things we'll never know until we actually experience it. I think it's probably similar to the kingdom of heaven. We're learning and getting some taste of what it's truly will truly be like, but the kingdom of heaven fully comes when we, on a journey, are learning and sharing with others. We continue going about our daily lives, living in the ways of Jesus and the awesomeness of the kingdom of heaven that we've been discipled by others in our faith communities. Our hope is that others, too, may experience the most precious, welcoming, joyful, and transforming treasure, the kingdom of heaven. May we be bold in our sharing and open to God moving in our midst and in our hearts. Amen.